Welcome to Cannon Crew, a weekly podcast discussing the Charleston Battery. Your host, Granite, will be joined by other defenders of the fleet from the Black and Yellow Supporters section, and together they will help fortify and conquer. They are the Cannon Crew.
Welcome to the Cannon Crew. I'm Granite, and I'm joined by Patrick. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm well. What's up, everybody?
And also joined by our elusive Ryan. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Granite. How are you?
Good. Where you been?
I just got back from Kansas City, the good old Midwest. First time out there. It's a great time. I was out there for a friend's wedding. Shout out to Jose and Audra. Congratulations on you two. Happy newlyweds.
Well, cool. That's fantastic. This is where I usually, you know, we always plan for the divorce, not the wedding. But that's just lawyers that do that stuff. Well, anyway, so we're here to talk about Charleston Battery and their match against the Hartford Athletic this past Saturday, May the 4th. And, of course, the 4th was with us all day. Cool little drone show afterwards. Kind of fun. Got to see them out in the practice field getting ready. Got out there when they landed. Very interesting. We should have those all the time, actually.
How many were there?
A bunch. I can count them.
If you had to guess. If you had to guess in a jar, you know.
144.
What?
I'm saying 12. Yeah, they were set out like a square. But just a guess. I mean, I'm just because you forced me and I just said 12.
Yeah, no, it's a good educated guess. It's what we want. What we encourage.
Was it as advertised?
Yes.
So
it was slow. It was cool. It was just slow.
It looked like the way the videos that we saw, it almost looked like they were like pre-made patterns, like 3D stamps in the sky.
Oh, it's pretty cool to see them come together, though, because all the lights go off and you see a little bit of glow of whatever they had, the little pilots in there, maybe had their little headsets on or whatever. And so they'd all kind of come together and the lights would come on. So you can see them forming.
But that's cool.
When you got underneath them, it was quite a buzz. I mean, it was like, it sounded like a bunch of bees up there. So it was kind of, it was interesting. It was, you know, it was a toss up between, do you like fireworks or do you like drones? I still contend if they had like Hellfire missiles on them or Maverick missiles or something like that, be best after show ever.
I saw them do the battery logo, and that looked pretty cool just from the Instagram post. I caught a glimpse of.
Yeah, they did a couple things. They had Darth Vader. They had kind of some lightsabers that were they were attempting to like whack each other. It was very slow, but very methodical. They had a big May the 4th be with you thing. It was interesting. It was different. So let's talk about the battery against Hartford. 1-0 win. I think it was a hard fought win coming off the back of last week where I was talking about, I felt like we just got lucky because a lot of times the defensive mistakes on the other team was allowing us to score goals. As a result, we got the 6. Hartford come back from after being beaten by 6 and put up a very good showing. I think they had a lot of players out the week before, to be fair, but they put up a pretty good showing. And we still played halfway decent this match. There's some other things we get into that caused some issues. First, last week we didn't mention this. Keeper had number 56 on. What a horrible number for a keeper.
Horrible.
Again, guess who's got number 40 on back? Yeah, this diving, lumpy bag of trash that every time somebody got close to him, he would flop on the ground like a fish. I thought he'd come out of by the pier and just kind of flopped up to the goal. There was a touch by Icaza that was just absolutely horrible. And even the announcer said, yeah, he's not going to win the Academy Award. He should have got a yellow card. He probably shouldn't ever play again.
Now, 40 isn't as bad of a number as 56 or what was the other one? 30-something, 32 or something like that for Vegas.
The good thing about his 40 is when he flipped upside down, it was, So that's kind of the way he played too. I mean, he literally went down. Every time anybody got close to him, he flopped on the ground. Tried to get Icaza a yellow card, grabbed his head, flopped on the ground. And then when the referee, who I was not too enamored with, said no way, he jumps back up, starts getting the referee's face and pointing two fingers like that should be a second yellow.
Well, and you're, you know, you do run into keepers like that. Maybe there's one or two like that around each league, but those keepers do exist where they tend to be the, like, you know, the star of the show for certain games. You know, an easy example in the Premier League would be Jordan Pickford. You know, certain games like that, he's a little overdramatic. He embellishes quite a bit. And definitely this keeper seemed to have the crowd's number a bit with the embellishments, and possibly knew that a few of those players are on card trouble. So why not get after them, try to get them on a yellow, get them out for a game or two, and just banner them.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah, exactly. Shame. Oh, no, it's absolute banter. There's another word for it, but
banter. It wasn't banter.
What would you say it is?
I would say that it is a cheap player that can't do anything but flop on the ground and try to get somebody's attention. That's what I say it is. Now, it hurts me to say this too, that he had an excellent save towards the last part of the game too, from a Nick shot at the goal. It was a fantastic save. But anyways, besides that, the rest of the time he was just flopping. Lineups? Big changes?
No changes again. Third week in a row.
3 games in a row.
Yep, 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah. I am surprised by this. And more so, which we can touch on a little later, but we didn't even see Gutierrez until the 98th minute, which of 99 minutes of total play time with added stoppage time. It's a little strange that you're bringing on the guy who we all think is directly competing with Juan David Torres for the starting position. And this guy sees a minute and a half. Now, maybe that's all tactical, maybe burn the end of the clock up at the end of the game. But I'm surprised we didn't see him come on and create a little more. I mean, Torres looked a little flat, to be honest, for about 30 minutes until he got in a little tough with, what was it, Beckham? Or Becker, whatever the guy's name is, who was like trying to, exactly what you talked about, the goalie, Granite, trying to influence a yellow card for no reason. And he just looked at him, wanted to receive the ball again, turn and go. And like, he did that thing we all do as a player when you get angry. You look back at the guy after you kick the ball away, like you were going to hit me, weren't you? Or like do a bad challenge. So after that point, I think he played a lot better, but I was surprised we didn't see Gutierrez start this one, to be honest. Like, yeah, just switching something up from what the competition has seen.
Now, Pat, one thing to kind of note, too, is that, you know, you're surprised that we're not seeing Gutierrez at that moment. And, you know, you can go back and look, you know, 78th minute, Juan Torres comes off. So if it's not Gutierrez coming on for him, who is it? It's actually Jake LaCava who comes on for him. That's an extra 20... you know, 18, 20 minutes that LaCava gets compared to Gutierrez's 1 minute. So right there, that kind of shows you the adaptability, the creativity that these players who are on the bench are willing to do, the roles they're willing to play to fight for time on the pitch. LaCava's a striker. We've seen him play on the right. We've seen him play up top. Now we've seen him on the left. He's all around just fighting to get minutes on this field.
Let's talk about one of the reasons why it might be that Jake come on. Before the match, saw Palma. He's in his street clothes. I think he has a hamstring problem. Rodriguez, before the match, saw him coming by the tunnel, and he was also in street clothes. So he still must be injured from, I guess, Miami?
Yeah, that's when he came off pretty much right after he went down in that game. So 71st minute.
You're not going to take Nick out until the last minute, of course, because when he's scoring goals like a beast. So the only person that can legitimately talk yourself into coming off earlier is Torres, unfortunately for him. But, and Jake, who else would you put there?
Yeah, that's a tough choice, just especially looking at the bench. I mean, what we have, like, we don't really have many options in this game, even off the bench, except for, like, the two guys you just mentioned, Jake and then maybe Gutierrez. Everyone else is kind of like a fill-in substitution for right now. We didn't have the injured players you mentioned. Like, we don't have Rodriguez who can come on and kind of do more of a controlled ball with Malloy and Allen, kind of play keep away a little bit. Torres is going to attack the whole time, but even putting LaCava on, he's more of your workhorse guy. He's there to keep that high pressure with MD and keep it going to force these mistakes by the other team's defense to win the ball back. But they don't look to, like, first things first, let's pull it back and play a little control game here. So I think we're just missing that with our bench right now.
So we had seven substitutes. We had eight with the Cougs, but seven substitutes. Two of them were Cobb and Dean. So that leaves you five, because you're not going to throw those young men out there in the heat of battle when you're up by 1-0 and Hartford's pushing on you. So you have leaves you with Drack, Crawford, Lacava, Conway, and Gutierrez. So there's not a whole lot of choices. That's the problem with having a short bench, right? You get a couple players hurt, and all of a sudden you're fighting for who goes where.
Yeah, it's a lot of attacking players too. So even if you want to control that game back, like, yes, you have Drack plays left back, but we've seen him in these past couple games come on and play in a forward role or as a like makeshift right wing center mid kind of help out, but he's not fit for this role. So there's not a lot of like, hey, we can plop a holy midfielder in and kind of just help out that core in the middle who's been running around the entire game, maybe settle these wild passes that we've seen for like 80 minutes, control the tempo a little bit, make Hartford do a little more running, and just maybe be more proactive to the counterattack is kind of what they seem to try and do the entirety of like the last 20 minutes is just go, go, go. Brian, did you see anything different to that?
No, it's just, you know, it's just kind of like a frustrating play by Battery. They just seemed very out of it, out of tune with each other. Couldn't quite get everything in motion, whether it was in the final third, the middle of the field, or even in their own defensive half. There was always somewhere they're just getting that little miscue, whether it was switching the pitch, coming in for a tackle, that they just weren't playing as clean as they're used to. And so they just had to play a more of defensive, I felt like more of a defensive mindset, sitting in a little bit more. And that's possibly why you also see Lacava playing in a little bit more, because he's a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more solid, holding up the ball compared to Gutierrez. Not knocking Gutierrez. He's a baller, but just saying that he's more of a skill player. Lacava's more in there to be more aggressive, shake things up. He's going to draw the fouls for sure. Just kind of was wanting more. We were all wanting more, obviously, and that's the frustrating end. You know, we win 6-0 last week. This team lost 6-0 last week to a totally different team who we also beat earlier in the year. So we had high hopes going into this game, and just a 1-0 result is just isn't it for us.
I mean, if you look at the numbers, just possession, in the first half, we're at 67%. They were at 33. At the end of 90, 59, 41. Passing accuracy, first half, 89% to 75%. And then at 90, 86% to 75%. So those are kind of our normal numbers. But it didn't seem like it panned out on the goal scoring portion.
Now, I don't know if this is something we can all learn from, or I'm sure it's something Coach Pierman's going to take to the team. But granted, do you think this is the best positive setback we can kind of get early on that's not a loss or a draw, and kind of get the team reformed or maybe head back in the game after what I assume is everyone going in exactly what we were thinking, that we were just going to hammer this team?
I think that's a great point, because one thing we haven't talked about, it's the fifth clean sheet for Grinney. He was the player of the match. He wasn't questioned a whole lot, but when he was, there was a couple of big saves. There was one low on the ground. It wasn't the cleanest shot, but it was a surprising one. He got down to it, had to push it behind the goal line. And the other one come in from the side after a kind of poor defending on our part. Overall, our defending, I think, was very good, even though we were being attacked. Their number nine was fast. I think he was faster than Segbers. If not, every time he got a step on him, Segbers couldn't close it. And so it was a battle back there. But our back four come through again, and that comes out with that clean sheet.
Second clean sheet in a row, and fifth one on the season for him. So out of 10 games, the average, basically a clean sheet every other game. It's not bad, and very good stat. And, you know, like we talked about in the beginning of the year, I think this is the award. If he's looking to win a personal award this year, this is what he would win, most clean sheets or the Golden Glove. But our defense is really solid right now. few question marks back there with the, you know, dealing with the injuries and stuff like that. But hopefully we can get the guys back to full strength and we can make a big push in the second half of the year. That's the main thing, is getting our guys healthy for that second half push. It's okay. We're going through injuries right now. We're 10 and out, or 10 games unbeaten. We're fantastic position. We just need to focus on maintaining a good pace and getting our guys healthy for that second half push of the season.
Yeah. And the one time that they did a great attack on us, Dos Santos, he slipped. And if you watch the whole match, everybody watching it from the field, it was like it was ice out there. First half, I thought it was just maybe Hartford was having the problem. Maybe they play on a artificial turf field and they didn't bring the right boots for him. And then all of a sudden, second half, everybody slipped and slide. And Hartford was flopping a lot too. But everybody was having problems keeping their footing on the field. And it was big chunks of grass coming up. So it was kind of interesting because we haven't had rain here for a while. But
that's a great point, because I was surprised. I wasn't able to attend the game, but I watched it. And especially for Battery players, how are we not the ones like adaptive to this field that we're training on? This is the second home game in a row. How are we not wearing the proper cleats to not slide, or at least know, hey, this side of the field is getting a little more water on it? Put in the soft grounds. At bare minimum, we should not be slipping and sliding or falling down. That's something that should not happen. And that's exactly what led to, in my mind, should have been a clear goal for them. Thank God it hit the post. A little bit of luck on our side, but that was a clear cut chance. Not a lot of defending you can do after that slip and miss. Like, no one's getting back to cover that. That's just a breakaway.
Yeah, DeSantos slips, and so the attacker gets past him. So Smith now has to pull to cover that person, and he goes flying past him. And then all of a sudden, you have Archer has to go out to pick him up. That leaves Segbers 1-on-1 with their number 9. And man, it rang loud and clear when it hit the wood there. It was very close, and there was a deep gasp in the supporter section because we knew that we just lucked out on that one.
And this one wasn't 2 minutes into the game. It was 33 minutes into the game, but you can see what Pyramid sees on the field by, like, hey, these one-off chances that they get, this game easily should have been 1-1, 33 minutes in, and I think we're in for a lot tougher of a match if that was the case, just the way they were playing. Especially in the midfield. They packed it in with 5 guys.
And they were taking it to us. That was not the team. I didn't watch them last week, but whatever team lost by 6 goals, this was not the team that showed up to us on Saturday night. These guys had it going on. They had the speed. Their passing accuracy was pretty good. They were getting in the space. The one shot that come on Grinny that was kind of low, the guy just come in behind our defenders and kind of looked like Nick there for a second, getting in behind the defenders. And so they were getting the space. They were taking some great shots. We're lucky. Yeah, you're right. We're lucky it wasn't 1-1.
Yeah. So enough depression. Can we get on to the shining moment of the game that had us all in awe?
Which one? Was it the Trek, or was it the Schwinn, or was it just the Markanic left-footed bicycle?
It wasn't a Huffy. I'll say that.
That was not a Huffy. Maybe a Cannon? It was a Cannon. Cannon bicycle. Nick was on the Cannon bicycle and put it in the back. Just not in the back, but in the upper corner. I mean, it was just, and it happened so quickly in the stands. We all went, what did we just see? Because it was at the other end where I went.
Did he have all 10 defenders on him?
It seemed like it, but he just seems to get in that space and slide in there. And the defender was on his back. I mean, the defender was right there. Just Nick just put it over his shoulder in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think that's the confidence we were talking about last week. Like, this is what you'll see, something that shouldn't be a chance. And he just has the confidence to take a swing at it. Maybe you're seeing that this is training ground stuff here. This is stuff you don't see on the field.
Exactly, right? You put an asterisk next to that one, say that one's lucky. To be able to control his body the way he did in just such close quarters is just amazing. Just amazing. You know, he made it look simple, and it's not simple.
Ryan, can you talk us through what a goalie sees? Because obviously it's just congestion from our view. Do you think he had a view of the thing, or is it just too good of a hit?
I mean, it all depends on you know, who's standing in front of him at the goalie and how far away. If the goalie's in his own 6-yard box, you know, you don't want to have anyone between you and, let's say, your PK spot, about 6 to 8 yards in front of you. And that's where your visibility is roughly at. If you have someone standing right in front of you from that distance, your visibility goes down to almost 15 to 20%. Because then you're moving or trying to move around the guy, and then that leaves you vulnerable to certain spots. I think where he was at, it was definitely a hard shot to see, and it's definitely a late reaction. It's a later timed reaction, and that's a thing that Grinny's been working on too. I've been seeing some highlight films over the summertime and working on his reactions and a few drills that I'm actually putting my students through right now.
So that's got to be the difference then. Just kind of preparing yourself for these situations and working your mind to be correct for them.
Yeah, no, that's definitely it. It's 100% reaction, because as a goalie, you have to train for a deflection inches away from you. You know, you do have, like, in certain situations, you'll have an attacker sitting on top of the goalie and the ball will go right to his foot and they'll just move their heel and the ball will just go right in between their legs, right off their heel and just right past the goalie. So you got to even be able just to have that quick reaction to get that ball off there. Constantly working on reactions is always going to be a thing for players to develop on, even at a young age, and to constantly work on even when they are pro. That's one thing young soccer players get frustrated with, is because they don't realize that a lot of soccer is just repetition. You know, once you've mastered juggling it to 10 or 15, you know, you keep doing it every single day, or you go to 100 and you keep going more and more and more. Well, to get really good at do reaction times, you got to keep getting faster and faster and faster, and that's what makes you better. But yeah.
Nick is standing on the penalty spot, back to the goal. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, arguably 5 players between him and the keeper. Keeper looks like he's centered on the goal about a yard or so off the goal line in this goal box. And Alan goes to take a swipe at it and kind of bounces funny. And Nick just about takes the guy's face out and puts it up in the upper left-hand top bins. I mean, it was already in the back of the net and the keeper hadn't even moved. So either he didn't see it, even if he saw it, I don't think he could have stopped.
Yeah. But look, while it's being crossed, like the moment it's being crossed over into the air, look at the keeper's head view, like where his head, and you can take the little marker and go across and look at his headline view of his defenders. There's no way he saw that ball.
I don't think so. Well, remember, the corner come in, and then it went out to Allen right above 18-yard box on the arc. And that's
where
he
loses it.
Yeah. Well.
So what we learned today is that Grinny's going to get keeper of the year because he doesn't have to face Nick, who bags his 12th goal of the season.
Correct.
Shoot, he could also win save of the year too. That save of the month he had against Louisville, still up there. Have more like that this year.
So I want to talk about Morris. I think he had an excellent game. He got in behind defenders. He put a ball on his foot, and he took a shot kind of at an angle and it come off the top crossbar. And all of us were gasping for air as it floated up there and then come off, and we couldn't finish it. So I think he had a great game. It seemed like a lot of the gameplay, we were purposely going down towards his side versus Nick's. So it was a little bit different look. And maybe that's to catch Hartford off guard, because we know we probably would like to prefer to go to Nick. But this time we tried to switch it up a little bit.
You know, is that another tactic too? Is that a team, like, we felt more confident that we could play more down that side? Let's practice it. Let's get better at it. Let's put a restriction on ourselves. Let's limit ourselves the amount of times we go down the right side of the field, or use Nick in an actual play and so on. Do you think that kind of happened? Like, it kind of looked like it a little bit.
That's what it looked like to me. And Torres, he wasn't necessarily getting into the box a lot. He did a couple times, but his crosses were just spot on. A lot of the crosses just failed to connect to anybody because there was nobody in the box, or they were just kind of standing there watching the ball come through. He hit some great crosses that were just, if somebody just got their head on it and ricocheted, it would have been come off like rockets off their foreheads.
I mean, that might have been the game plan. Maybe they saw something pregame that we didn't see, but I don't know. I don't see how you just don't feed your hot hand to Nick on that side and let him and MD do a little 1-2 play off the ball and do what's been working for us. Because, I mean, as a coach, I don't think any of you would say, hey, we'll try this, but I know we're not going to score 6, but we need to work on this. You're going to want to win as big as possible. This is your job on the line. This is what you do. I mean, Torres looked flat for 30 minutes, and he did finally turn it on. But I was just wondering, like, some of these crosses, they look dangerous, but people weren't getting in on it early on. I wasn't understanding, like, are we not, maybe we should be shifting Nick into the center. Maybe we should play a 2-striker and something like a 4-2-2-2 or something like that. Because we really did have our best wing play that we've seen all season. And maybe this is what they were seeing from Hartford that we weren't seeing, but I don't know. I don't see how you just don't feed the guy who's keeping your team single-handedly in it all season and just force Hartford to make the play on him.
Well, because I think their defenders, they defended very well. They were on. They didn't give him as much space. And when they tried to, when he gave him a yard, he still did a bicycle kick, and that's where he got the goal from. But everything else, he wasn't getting a step on him. He wasn't finding those spots behind defenders or in between defenders. And I think that was changing how he was able to address taking shots. He didn't have a lot of shots. So.
Is that because of the restriction on him? Like, if you're a player, you're playing up front, and you know that there's a restriction on you playing-wise, that's going to change how you play mentally and physically. Like, you're not going to be as tuned. You're not going to be selling your runs as much. You're just going to be kind of like up there.
If he's like that, he needs to change his attitude. I don't think he's like that, though. I think the defense was just keeping him in check, and I think they were keying on him, where Torres had a lot more freedom.
I don't mean like, you know, Nick was moping and stuff like that about it. I'm just saying, though, like he's just being misstepped on it. Like, he was just easier to mark more than normal.
And I'm saying we're paying a lot of money for him not to be that way. If he wants to be the golden boot of the season, he's got to take every opportunity.
I see what you're saying. I see maybe the game plan was more focused to not have him touch the ball as much. Cause I was wondering watching it,
right.
Like, was this like only the second time or third time by like 30, 40 minutes in that he's touched the ball? But I mean, we're doing a big disservice to their defense, because they did game plan correctly and they were very attack forward, like doubling up as soon as one of our players got the ball in their third. They were immediately on it and trying to close it down. I mean, they sat for the most of the game. They sat all 10 men in their own half, and not just because we had this amazing build-up play. We passed it around our defensive line like, every time we tried to build something, we did that like 4 or 5 times around. So I think their defense just had a really good game plan. They stuck to it and closed us down. So kudos to them.
They had 15 tackles to our 11, clearances 14 to our 7. And even though we had a little higher on possession, it'd be interesting to see how much time in each other's half that each team had. And they probably had more time in our half than we had in theirs. And part of that's kind of artificial because we did a little more building out of the back than they did. But I think it was pretty even on that. And their defense was just doing a really good job. And I don't think Nick ever got the opportunity, other than his spectacular bicycle kick, to get where he usually gets. Because last game, he had space and he could outrun everybody. Here, they were packing back into the box. They weren't really packing the box like parking the bus. But the defenders were really not giving him the room to be able to do what he does best.
That was actually a great game plan by Hartford, too. In a way, yes, they're not parking the bus. They're sitting in a little tighter, but then as soon as they get the ball, they're up and out to where they're at a second tier. They're not playing out of the back, but they're skipping that first level of the attack. They're going to that second tier, and that's where they had all their success. That's where they played out every single time. They immediately just went right over the top and were able to play out. And exactly to your point, that's why we saw them have more possession in our half of the field compared to ours, because we would just roll it right inside or just to the side of our 18 compared to them. They're throwing it almost to the midfield already.
Yeah. I wonder if you guys saw this It's something that kind of just stuck out a little bit. It wasn't super obvious, but when we attacked, we overcommit a little bit. And as soon as we kind of like got the ball past us, like 3 feet, they kind of like, not really going to work super hard back. But when we kept a high press, they were super flustered between their goalie, center backs, left back, right back, and they just booted the ball right back to us. So I'm just curious if you guys saw that, or like, is this something we need to focus on a little more, maybe make earlier subs to keep fresh legs and keep this kind of game style, game plan in place?
Honestly, in my opinion, I think this is a little eye-opener for the Battery players. You know, we are in a very unique situation, having 10 games played unbeaten in 2 months right now of the year. And we haven't had that loss yet, nor that big blowout loss. And this time last year is when it came. We lost 7-0. And we still didn't play to our best abilities this past game. We still squeaked out the win. And I'm now hoping that this wakes up these Battery players and we can get back to how we are playing these past 2 months, you know, to get those to that 9 unbeaten run. You know, these last two games that we played haven't been the best. Let's get it back going. We got some tougher opponents coming up. You know, we have Detroit. We have, you know, Pittsburgh's getting on a little run now. I know they're still bottom table, but they're still a good team.
So I want to give a shout out to the person that really had a bad game, and that's referee. Center refs are not supposed to use the whistle so much. It changes the flow of the game. This guy seemed to blow the whistle when he wasn't supposed to. It wouldn't blow the whistle when he was supposed to. There was a clear shot in the box by Ikaza. It deflected almost at a 90-degree angle off a defender's foot, and he calls it a goal kick instead of corner kick. And everybody was just incredulous. It was like, you know, what did you see that we didn't see? Because we all saw it go off a defender. And there were several other calls like that. He just seemed didn't have be in control of the match. And he just was letting fouls happen, and other fouls were not fouls. He was, you know, calling and kind of messed up the flow of the game and kind of put us at a disadvantage a couple times.
I'll say, watching the broadcast, the only thing I did appreciate is, and I don't know, Ryan, if you can attest to this, but you can actually hear the center ref, a lot of his communication saying to the players, this is what happened, this is what happened, which I thought was helpful, just understanding that he's willing to communicate this way and not just blow the whistle that we see so often and like push your arm to say, just get away from me, don't talk to me, go away or I'll give you a card. I heard that part. And I was okay with it, but yeah, I don't know. It's tough when you get some obvious calls not go your way. I mean, we see it at every level, and I don't know if that's something we just need to, as fans or just as U.S. soccer patrons, just try and get our system better and become the best refs in the world. We have enough people to do it, so.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree on that, on helping the growth and definitely the development for our referees and the referee association in the U.S. Definitely feel like it definitely improved in a lot of areas. But, you know, it's definitely negative feeling to have a referee like that on your home field making those calls, blatant calls against your team. And when, you know, you say, oh, I didn't get that call, like, oh, the referee didn't call it, or it's like a 50-50 challenge, you know, those are just like little middle games. But when you blatantly kick it off the guy's foot, everyone sees it and it goes straight up in the air and out of bounds and you call a goal kick, you're going to be a bit frustrated. And that's when you get players starting to check out. And that's where I'm really emphasizing on an eye-opener this game is, because we're going to have more frustrating games this season to come. We still have, 24 more games left to play this season? So we're 10 deep. We're 10 deep, 24 left. It's going to be a little bit more frustrating. And I think we're in it for the long run. I still believe that we're going to make a very, very deep run. And we just have to stay healthy and keep our heads clean.
For sure. Different story if we're up by 6 and you're not getting that one call, as opposed to only 1-0 up. So I can see
nobody's perfect. there's nobody, if, you know, I do some youth level stuff, and I would like to tell parents and coaches, let me follow you around for 90 minutes during your day, and let me nitpick everything that you do. And I guarantee you, you're probably making less decisions in your whole workday than a referee's out there making or not making in that 90 minutes easily. You're going to miss some things, but this one was so obvious, and you have an AR that should have been able to see it. Maybe there's somebody obstructing his view, because that does happen, but it seems like they should have caught that. And if it's one call, that's one thing. But if it's several that seem to be inconsistent, and you see the referee's in a good position, it can has eyes on what's happening, and they're making the wrong call, that's that inconsistency is what causes some problems for people. So this is a great thing, because I'm passionate about it. And maybe this is another one of these special episodes. We get, see if we can get some people that officiate at different levels and have a little talk with them and see what they're seeing, what they, you know, what's happening from their view on the pitch and off the pitch and everything else. I think it'd make a great series of podcasts talking, you know, but talking with ARs, talking with the center refs. So a couple other shout outs before we wrap this all up. Chris Allen, USL Championship Team of the Week, named for player out for week 9.
Woo, go Chris.
Yeah, and he had, that's the 6th week out of 9 that we've had a battery player on that, and the last 4 in a row.
Yep, not going to get tired of seeing that. Should be one at least every single week.
Yeah, as it should be. Agree with that.
And also had a nominee for goal of the week the past 4 weeks. Torres won at week 7. Nick currently leading the vote for week 9. I don't know how he doesn't win that. I don't know how I didn't look at the other goals, but I'm biased.
Supporters.
So I don't need to look.
That's all it is. Yeah. Supporters. So we need the battery supporters out there. Vote.
Our next league match is Wednesday, May 15th. It's one of our Eastern Conference rivals, Birmingham Legion FC. And we're playing there. That kickoff is at 8 p.m. And so I imagine I'll be bellied up to, I'll be hanging out at our watch party location, Edmunds Host Brewing Company, and enjoying a lot of fan support there, even though it's a Wednesday night. And one final shout out. Charles United Soccer Club, 2011 boys, won their state championship match this past weekend, and will be going to Dallas for regionals in June, playing with Texas. Big shout out to Emmett. All I have. Anybody have anything else? Peace.
Peace.
See you guys. Do you hear my cannons roar? Can you feel the thunder?